Dizzy Yuppie Special Features.
Magandang umaga. This is DZUP Special Features. Ako muli si Gian Libroho. Samahan kaming pahinggan muli ang Nuclear Energy Forum Considerations and Essential Information na ginanap noong August 22, 2017. Pahinggan po natin ang mga lecture na IAEA Support on Infrastructure Development for a Nuclear Program ni Dr. Jose Bastos ng International Atomic Energy Agency at Nuclear Policy and Technology Across the Globe ni Dr. Ahmed Abdullah ng University of California, San Diego at Carnegie Mellon University. Ito handog sa atin ng UP National Engineering Center, Engineering Research and Development for Technology at UP Engineering Research and Development Foundation Incorporated. Ating muling pahinggan.
Our next speaker is a mechanical engineer with a PhD from the University of Poitiers in France. He is a specialist in fluid dynamics and heat transfer. At present, he is the technical leader on nuclear power infrastructure development at the IAEA. As a senior expert, he conducted workshops and training courses in most of the countries embarking in nuclear power programs. He was also the team leader of the IAEA Infrastructure Review Service for Kenya, Malaysia, Morocco, and Poland. Before joining the IAEA in 2014, our speaker worked at the Federal Authority for Nuclear Regulations, which is the nuclear regulatory body in the United Arab Emirates. He was in charge of the development and implementation of a competency building program to support the licensing process of the first nuclear power plant in the UAE and of the establishment of an integrated management system for the overall organization. From 2008 to 2011, he worked at the Nuclear Safety Department of the IAEA, where he was the scientific secretary for the International Safety Group, INSAG, and from 2005 to 2008, he worked in AREVA in the design of the ATMEA-1 nuclear power plant. So without further ado, I'd like to call to the front Mr. Jose Bastos of the Nuclear Power Infrastructure Development Section, International Atomic Energy Agency.
So I would like to start my presentation quoting a statement of our Director General, Mr. Amano, that say that each country is sovereign to decide or not to go to nuclear power. In case of a positive decision, the agency will support the country on the several steps to move to nuclear power. I must say that the agency is not a promoter of nuclear energy. If a country decides to go nuclear power, the agency is there to support in the different areas. So here is a table that shows the status of countries interested in nuclear power all over the world. Going from the bottom to the top of the table, here we have the number of countries interested in nuclear power or countries that have shown some political interest. So, you know, at the agency we have several meetings. In particular, we have the General Conference, which is a big gathering of most of the embarking countries participate. And we have statements from about 30 countries saying that they are interested in nuclear power. 11 countries are considering the introduction of nuclear power, and six additional ones are actively working on what we call pre-feasibility studies to show the viability of the nuclear power plant in the country. I would say that from the presentations we received until now, the Philippines are in this phase that is making some preliminary studies to provide information for an informed decision by the decision makers in the country. Here we have about 6 countries that have already decided to introduce nuclear power. So these are countries that are building the infrastructure to move to nuclear power. We have 2 countries that have ordered the nuclear power plant but didn't start construction, and 2 embarking countries that already construction and are in the late stages of construction. And here I'm talking mainly about UAE and Belarus. So what are the drivers for embarking countries to be interested in nuclear energy? So here I put a few of them that came up from our visits to embarking countries. Is to get some energy independence. It's also because of the volatile prices of the fossil fuels. Climate change is another driver, but I would say the most important, and here it seems not to be different from the presentation that we just received, is the increased demand for energy. So the agency, in order to support embarking countries, I must say that this activity of developing a nuclear power plant is relatively recent activity for the agency. The agency has a lot of experience with operating countries, but not so much on the earlier phases of the program. So in order to support countries, a framework, which is the milestone approach, was developed and issued in 2007. This is this document. It's a kind of logical approach for moving forward in a nuclear power program. It establishes 3 phases and 19 issues. So this is basically the framework that was proposed by the agency, and I must say, is being adopted by all countries embarking in nuclear power. So here is the phase where the Philippines are. This is phase 1, considerations before a decision to launch a nuclear power program. And this phase ends by the milestone 1, when the country is ready to make a knowledgeable decision. Notice that for us, a knowledgeable decision can be a positive or a negative decision. Okay? Both are considered for us satisfactory if these are informed decisions. Then we have here phase 2, which is the phase of preparation for the construction phase, which is the phase 3. And here is mainly where the country are building the institutions and the competencies in order to move on with the nuclear power plant. Here we have milestone 2, which is the country is ready to invite for a bid or to negotiate a contract with a vendor organization. And phase 3 is the phase of licensing and construction of the nuclear power plant that finishes here by milestone 3, when the country is ready for the commissioning of the nuclear power plant. So as I mentioned, this framework is divided in 3 phases and considers 19 issues. These issues are variable. Some are technical, some are less technical. So we have national position, which is mainly the vision and the strategy of how the country will move on for the next phases. We have nuclear safety, which is the consideration of the safety aspects in the nuclear power program. We have management, funding and financing, and so on and so forth. So we have 19 issues and 3 phases, and a country, based on this logic of the agency, is supposed to take actions in each phase, in each one of these 19 issues. So, summarizing, phase 1 is the phase where you would develop what we call pre-feasibility studies in order to provide information to the decision makers of the country to go or not for a nuclear power program. Phase two is the phase of preparation, building the institutions, developing the human resources in order to move on for the later phase, which is the phase of the construction of the nuclear power. So phase one, again, what is described in the milestones approach? Pre-feasibility studies, all the range of studies that needs to be done, human resources development, siting studies, stakeholder involvement studies, studies on terms of legal and regulatory aspects that is needed for the later phases. This pre-feasibility study is supposed to provide information that is summarized in a comprehensive report, and this is for decision making that will support the decision makers to take the final decision. And in case the final decision is positive, this comprehensive report should drive the elaboration of a strategy to go to nuclear. It's always important to emphasize the role of the NEPIO in phase one. NEPIO is this organization, or I would say is more a mechanism than an organization, that coordinates the different stakeholders in the country in order to prepare this comprehensive report. I understand that here in the Philippines you have already an organization that has this role. And I think this is fundamental for the coherence of these pre-feasibility studies and the coherence of the policies that will be developed later on. Milestone two is when you are ready to invite for bids. And as I mentioned, phase two is the phase where you will be building your organizations. And I would say in particular, the two main organizations that will have a role later on, which is the owner operator and the regulatory body. Or the regulatory bodies. Some countries have more than one regulatory body. So phase two, as I mentioned, is the phase where first you will establish through the nuclear law that will create the regulatory body. And I would say this is a critical phase for the regulatory body because the regulatory body, as soon as the decision is taken, has to start to be operational. This is the first organization that needs to be put in place and needed to be issuing regulations and guidance because some of these regulations and guides are critical for the bidding process that will be taken later on. So the regulatory body has a critical role in the very beginning of a nuclear power program for different reasons. One of them is that they need to drive some of the activities that will be conducted in phase three. And in terms of the human resources, this is the organization that needs more time to develop the competencies that will be needed for the licensing process and later on for overseeing the construction. So here is what we see also. Normally the creation, if the decision is positive, the creation or we starting the involvement of the future owner-operator, and we see different approaches in different countries. Some countries create a new organization starting from scratch to be the future operator of this nuclear power plant. Others uses already existing organizations that are operating, let's say, conventional plants. Let's say that there are advantages and the disadvantages in these different approaches. When you create a new organization, probably you can bring on board to the new organization the competencies that exist in nuclear in the country, which is very good. But then this organization needs to be built and the project management skills needs to be developed in this organization. In the opposite case, when you have an organization that is already operation conventional nuclear power plants, what we see is that these organizations needs to be what we call nuclearized. They need some training to understand the specifics of nuclear in relation to the conventional sources of energy. However, these organizations normally have already a lot of project management skills. So what we see normally in a country when they decide positively to go to nuclear power, the first major step there is the issuance, or probably in the case of the Philippines, a revision of the nuclear law in order to address, let's say, the new requirements or the international standards in relation to the legal and regulatory framework. One of them is to have an independent regulator, adherence, as it was mentioned before, to the international legal instruments. And here it was mentioned that the Philippines is already part of the Convention on Nuclear Safety and the Joint Convention, but they adhered but didn't ratify it yet. So this process normally happens in phase two of a nuclear power program. So here we go to milestone three, when the country is ready for commissioning. Phase three is the phase where you start construction. We start construction. The regulatory body needs to provide the license for construction. So we expect that most of the things will happen, most of the serious things will happen in this phase, very demanding phase for the country, both for the owner operator as well as the regulatory body. Here, we expect that at the end of this process, we will have an operating organization established with full capacity to operate and maintain the nuclear power plant.
Ikaw ba'y guro ng math and science? Kung ganun, tara na at makinig sa programang tanging para sa'yo, Go Teacher Go! Tungkol sa mga bagong math and science teaching techniques, inain, hindi lang pang guro, pang estudyante pa. Go Teacher Go! Tuwing Webes, alas 4 ng hapon, dito lang sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
Araw-araw ba, ito na lang ang iyong naririnig? Teka, ito naman, naririnig mo pa ba? Huwag natin hayaan na tuluyang mawala at masira ang ating kalikasan. Protektahan natin ito. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
Hindi ka ba napapagod o di kaya'y nagsasawa?
Sa ating mga tampuhang walang hanggang katapusan, napahid ng mga luha, damdamin at puso'y tigang.
Alam mo pala yung kantang yan?
Siyempre naman, Ma.
Naku, panahon pa namin yan eh. Gusto mo, pakita ko mga tape niyan?
Ayos, mag-soundtrip tayo, Ma.
O, sige.
Eto na, eto na.
Walang kupas ang ganda ng musikang Pinoy. Patuloy natin tangkilikin ang sariling atin. Suportahan natin ang musikang Pinoy. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602. Kasali ka!
DZUP Special Features.
Nagbabalik ang Nuclear Energy Forum Considerations and Essential Information sa DZUP Special Features.
The milestones approach is not a safety standard, if you are familiar with the safety standards of the agency, but this document became a reference for most of the embarking countries. And for what I saw here in Philippines, it's also the case, you are adopting the milestones approach. In order to review the status of the country and the level of preparation of the country for the different phases, the agency developed a service called International Nuclear Infrastructure Review, or INIR missions, and this is a mission that supports the country to review their studies or their actions, and with a group of international experts that come to the country, we review and provide recommendations and suggestions in order to improve the activities that are expected to happen in this phase. So this inner mission is based on the milestones approach. It's an international peer review, as many other that the agency conducts, and provides to the country recommendations and suggestions. There is a slight difference between what is considered as a recommendation and a suggestion. And this is at discretion of the country to request these services. In the case of the Philippines already requested a near service to the agency that is supposed to be delivered by the agency in 2018. So these are the countries that have requested, and we already conducted in-ear missions. You can see that there is a large palette of countries in different parts of the world. What is interesting to remark here is that we have South Africa, which is a country which is already operating a nuclear power plant, but they consider that this is the same approach applies to countries with a limited nuclear power program, or to countries that have not been constructing for a very long time. Some of the issues that the countries like South Africa or like Hungary or several other countries that do not construct nuclear power plants for the last 20 years, they have similar issues, legal, regulatory, HRD. So here I put this flow diagram of an in-year, what we call an in-year process, just to show where we are with the Philippines. So the Philippines sent to the agency a request for a mission. We responded positively to this request recently. So the next step that we expect is that at the agency we identify who will be the team leader to start the discussions with Philippines. What is very important is that we expect to receive from the Philippines what we call a self-evaluation report, which is based on the milestones approach, which is basically this document here. This is a national effort to prepare a report that will be the basis for us to conduct the inner missions. This is a very important document because during the inner mission, all the conclusions will be taken will be based on what is written in this report, plus the interviews that will be conducted with the counterparts. So we are here in this point. We need to discuss when the Philippines will be ready to send to the agency a preliminary version of this report. In order for us to make an analysis of this report, depending on the content of this report, we can conduct what we call the self-evaluation support mission in order to improve the report for the final mission that will take place probably second semester of 2018. So this is where we stand, knowing that is the pre-mission, and here continues with the mission, completes preparatory work, etc., etc. So here is the whole process. The whole process have four steps: self-evaluation preparation, self-evaluation revision by the agency, pre-inner mission, which is a logistical discussion about how to conduct the mission here in the Philippines. Then we have the mission itself. And after the mission, we expect that the Philippines will develop an action plan to address the recommendations and suggestions provided by the mission. And 1 or 2 years after, we come back to the Philippines to review the level of implementation of those recommendations. So we expected that after the main mission, the Philippines will develop an action plan and we will work together on supporting the implementation of this action. If you want to understand a little bit the results of the previous in-air missions, we issued a document about the experience that we gained during 6 years of in-air mission. And here you have the most recurrent issues that we identified in different embarking countries. And here is not in the order, but these are the 5 issues where we identified problems in the different countries. So, national position, which is this decision-making process. Many countries are making these preliminary studies which are necessary for the decision making, but the decision is not happening. Management, in many cases we see countries not really prepared to start a phase two because they don't have a good management system in place or a good quality assurance, quality control systems in place, which are necessary for the later phases of the program. Legal framework, sometimes we have countries don't have a comprehensive nuclear law, or they have a nuclear law which does not cover all the elements that are expected. Sometimes we see deficiencies in terms of adherence to the international legal instruments. Regulatory framework, and I would say here is a critical issue which is closely related to the following issue, human resources development. As I mentioned, building a regulatory body is a very complex thing to be done in the time frame of a project. Developing a regulation is something that takes a certain number of years, and due to the short time frame between the time you decide to nuclear to the time that you start to delivering results or delivering licenses for construction or for operation, this is not sufficient for the complete development of the regulatory body. So what we see in embarking countries is a mix between local regulations and external consultants supporting this overall process. And this implies on the regulatory body having enough financial resources to be able to hire these external consultants. Now at the last topic of my presentation, after talking about in-year missions, which is a service provided by the agency to the technical cooperation program offers support through workshops, training courses, advisory missions to member states, as you are used to have in other areas. I would say that in the area of nuclear power, we can consider that the support the agency can offer is limited. However, it is strategic because it covers crucial areas like safety, security, and safeguards. We develop a series of documents that would be useful for you to be aware, and you can consult in the different topics. In under all the 19 issues that I presented before, we develop supporting documents. So in the area, for example, of legal, there are some documents that you can go through that provides more detailed explanation. In the area of HRD, in the area of siting, in all the areas you have, we develop this bibliography because it tries, the agency has a website which is very difficult to find things. And as this is cross-cutting through different departments, we try to compile all the documents under this, what we call nuclear infrastructure bibliography, that we maintain up to date as new documents appear. It has also some training materials. Part of this bibliography is what we call e-learn modules, and we have e-learning modules for most of the 19 issues, not all of them, but many of them. This is a very good introduction to the issue, and it explains a little bit the issue and what is expected by the country in each of the phases. The last tool that I would like to mention, and you have here also the link to the website link, is the competency framework, which is a tool that we develop also to support embarking countries. It tries to capture our experience with embarking countries, and we put in this competency framework some elements. This is a database which identify which activities are expected to be done by each country in each phase and in each issue. It identifies what are the main organizations responsible to develop this activity, and it tries to identify what types of competencies are necessary in the country in order to be able to perform the activity. So if I take a simple case, for example, developing a regulatory develop a licensing process, okay? So you will identify that when this is expected to be developed, this is expected to be developed in phase two, by whom? By regulatory body. What are the typical competencies that are needed in order to perform this activity? And you would say it's people with some background in nuclear safety, radiation safety, in legal aspects, and so on and so forth. So this is helpful to countries that want to develop their work plans for the future in order to identify and provide the responsibilities to different organizations involved in the process. So I think with this, I conclude my presentation. Thank you very much for your time.
Magbabalik ang Nuclear Energy Forum, Considerations and Essential Information sa DZUP Special Features. Ang DZUP ay kasapin ng KBP, kapisanan ng mga broadcaster ng Pilipinas. Sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka!
Sinta kita.
Iniibig kita.
Iniirog kita.
Inanais kita.
Mahal kita.
Ang daming paraan para masabi na mahal mo ang isang tao gamit ang ating sariling wika. Ba't di na lang ito ang gamitin mo? Ugaliing gamitin ang mga salitang tunay na atin. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602, kasali ka.
Noong natapa ka sa sobrang kakulitan.
Mama!
Noong nag-break kayo ng boyfriend mo.
Mommy!
Noong bumagsak ka sa math exam mo.
Nay!
Noong kasama mo ang tropa.
Mama!
Noong gumraduate ka na cum laude sa kolehiyo.
Ma!
Ilang beses mo na ba natawag ang pangalan niya mula nang ipanganak ka? Kahit minsan ba nadugtungan mo na ito ng salamat po. Lagi nating iparamdam sa ating mga ina na sila'y mahalaga. Isang paalala mula sa DZUP 1602.
DZUP Special Features.
Nagbabalik ang Nuclear Energy Forum, Considerations and Essential Information sa DZUP Special Features.
To discuss nuclear policy and technology across the globe, our next speaker is an adjunct assistant professor at the Department of Engineering and Public Policy at Carnegie Mellon University. He is a Jacobs postdoctoral fellow at the University of California, San Diego, and a member of UC San Diego's Deep Dark Decarbonization Initiative. Our next speaker manages a diverse energy policy research portfolio that investigates the political economy of carbon-free energy technologies. His interest is in optimizing public sector investments in clean energy and the environment. In his work, he employs mixed method studies that require engineering, economic modeling, optimization, expert elicitation, and behavioral surveys. Our speaker earned his PhD from Carnegie Mellon University's Department of Engineering and Public Policy, where his doctoral work focused on the economic and institutional challenges facing a class of emergent energy technologies, small modular nuclear reactors in particular, that are being proposed in various countries for various applications. As part of this work, he explored options for enhancing nuclear safety and security in a multipolar world. His research has been supported by a number of organizations, including the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation and the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation. He is a graduate of Princeton University's Department of Chemical and Biological Engineering, where he won a number of research awards, a science rock star, if I may say so. So it gives me great pleasure to introduce to you our postdoctoral fellow of the University of California, San Diego, and assistant professor of Carnegie Mellon University, Dr. Ahmed Y. Abdullah.
The world now has one fewer technology option for nuclear power. So I was asked by Millie-Ann to give a country-by-country review of the major markets and to discuss the opportunities and challenges that exist in them. And I decided to focus on these three major questions. So you have, what commercial challenges and opportunities face major markets domestically? What major nuclear innovations are being touted in these markets? And of course, what can an emergent nuclear nation like the Philippines learn from these experiences? And by learn, I mean, whose basket should you put your eggs in if you are the Filipino Secretary of Energy or the Filipino government in general? I will start with South Korea, which over the past decade has really become the darling of the nuclear world. South Korea has 24 reactors, thousands of years of reactor experience. Its nuclear power plants provide roughly a third of the electricity that the country gets, so it's a major player in the field. It's also a strong nuclear supplier. In fact, it has emerged as a very competitive nuclear supplier. Its greatest success by far has been in the United Arab Emirates, where it sold four APR 1400 nuclear power plants, and it has an interest in becoming a major nuclear exporter, if not the major nuclear exporter. In fact, it also has what's termed Korea Inc. It has the industrial policy and the backing of the government that allows the country to go forward in the world and become a one-stop shop for nuclear customers. So that's the opportunity that exists in Korea. However, there are challenges. In fact, Korea was only the ascendant nuclear supplier until 3 months ago, when there was an election that brought in a new president, President Moon Jae-in, and he is fulfilling the will of the people, as he puts it, by reducing the reliance on nuclear with the goal of eliminating that reliance this century. So they seriously want to reverse their position on nuclear and focus on LNG, which we heard about today, and focus on renewables. The anti-nuclear movement in Korea is very strong. It was buoyed by Fukushima, which happened close to Korea. It was also buoyed by the North Korean nuclear weapons program, despite it not being a power program. The new president still wants to export technologies, despite not relying on nuclear power himself or for his own country.
And the problem there is that it's hard to convince people to buy your technology if you're not deploying your technology in your own country. In fact, the only way Korea managed to convince the UAE to go for its reactors was to submit a competitive bid that relied on the fact that they were building two APR 1400 units in their own country. And the anti-nuclear movement is not really idle talk. I pulled these headlines over the past 2 days. Operational profits are low. The reversal in 3 months has had a tremendous impact on KEPCO and on Korea Inc. South Korea's export ambitions are already being called dead, even though you'd think in 3 months there hasn't been massive movement on the ground. However, there has been. Policy direction matters, as we heard, and it's important to have a cohesive policy. And we see that the UAE is anxious to complete its projects. I hear the completion date for the UAE's reactors has slipped from 2017 to 2018, but that project is not affected by these changes. So let's move to another country, which is Japan. Japan is an eminent supplier, and we have actually experts from that country who can chastise me or correct me if I say anything wrong here. Japan has about 40 reactors, and they used to produce about a third of the country's electricity until the Fukushima accident. Since then, nuclear power has provided only about 2% of the country's electricity, but that's really where the good news, if you can call it that, ends. Japan is facing some serious challenges on both the innovation front and on the deployment front. Reactor restarts are delayed. I believe the Ohi 3 and Ohi 4 reactors have been cleared to be restarted. However, there are still protests and still chances of them being delayed till next year, those restarts. And of course, Japan's fabled beast, the Monju reactor, has finally been shut down, probably for good, at a cost of about $10 billion. The challenges in Japan really revolve around one word, which is Fukushima. Fukushima continues to be TEPCO's main attention hog. It is the country's main attention hog as well. Brief update on that. They were planning on building an ice wall around the plant to make sure groundwater doesn't infiltrate the site. That ice wall is nearing completion. A few days ago, they found an American World War II bomb on the site, so that's interesting. The anti-nuclear movement has become far more mature as a result of Fukushima. And the delays really may compromise the achievement of Japan's Paris targets. Japan wants to reduce its emissions by 26% by 2030. It's relying on nuclear power to go back up to at least 25% of its energy mix. However, Japan remains a crucial supplier of nuclear components, and it's part of the nuclear supply chain. Japan is simply too integrated in that supply chain for Fukushima to destroy that business. And it has a reputation of engineering excellence that survived Fukushima and will probably continue for the foreseeable future. The third country I wanted to discuss was France. Nuclear power has really done France much good. It has 58 reactors with a huge capacity, and that provides traditionally about 70% of the country's electricity portfolio. You can see in this graph that the green countries are the ones with the cleanest electricity in the world. The Philippines is red, by the way, so I decided not to show it because of the reliance on coal. Canada, Norway, Brazil are all very clean because they rely on hydro. The Philippines is cleaner than most of Southeast Asia because it also relies on hydro and geothermal. But France is the only non-hydro nation that's green, and that's because of its reliance on nuclear power. So nuclear has been a boon for France, really. It is by far the most nuclear-dependent nation on Earth, and that has translated to benefits for health, benefits for exports. France consistently exports much of a huge part of its electricity, actually, to countries like Germany, the UK, and the like, its neighbors. But its commitment to nuclear power has been tested, actually, quite strongly. Last year, 20 to 30% of France's nuclear reactors were shut down over the course of several months because they found some defects, specifically carbon segregation, that pose safety concerns. And the country wanted to shut those reactors down and make sure that there was nothing wrong. In the end, they decided there was nothing wrong. And 2017, they started restarting those reactors. But that did rattle the industry somewhat, and it did bring to the fore the fact that even reliance on nuclear does not guarantee energy security, which everyone knows, but which some people in France were touting nuclear as the energy security measure par excellence. Another thing about France I should mention is that François Hollande, the previous president, decided to reduce, after Fukushima, the country's dependence on nuclear power from 70 to about 50%. And it seems like the current president, Emmanuel Macron, is going to keep that level, that commitment. He wants to reduce reliance on nuclear power somewhat. Moving on to a country that really began or helped spur the nuclear enterprise, which is Russia. And the only thing I can say about Russia as a non-expert on this country in particular is that Russia is Russia. It keeps doing what it's been doing for a while. It has 35 reactors that are producing about a sixth of the country's electricity. It is the first nation to change the industry, the deployment strategy, radically by offering what's called the BOOR model, the build, own, operate, return. And in my discussions here in the Philippines, it seems like a lot of Filipino energy experts are interested in that model. This model sees a nation build the plant for you. They can give you ownership, or they can keep ownership themselves. They can operate it for you for 60 years, and then they'll do what's called a fuel take back. They'll take all the waste back to their own country. And that's what Russia was offering. However, while that is attractive, there has been some pushback from nations, emerging nations like Kenya, who say actually the purpose of a nuclear power program is to become sufficient ourselves. And we want to train people, and we want the engineering know-how, and we don't want this to become a power purchasing agreement so much as a development agent for the country. And I imagine the Philippines wants the same sort of arrangement as well. Also, the idea of a country taking back the fuel is not proven. They want to do it in some nations. I believe Turkey was talking about it, although that's no longer the case. And the reason for that is because it relies really on commitments that you expect to be honored but might well not be honored. So the challenges facing the BOOR model is that the return issue is politically unpalatable in most countries. And we may hear more about the Russian case later on. But I believe even in China, fuel take back is not considered an option. Even in cases where nuclear security is at stake, and America has had to go in and take back fuel from countries like Libya, that has become a politically charged question. As you can imagine, the Americans don't want Libyan fuel on their country's soil. So there's politics here more than technical issues. It also depends entirely on the geopolitical relationship. When you are signing for a BOOR, or when you're signing with Russia in general, you are acceding to a 100-year strategic partnership with the Russians. And every country evaluates that strategic partnership differently. Some countries want it. Russia is a guarantor of security. Other countries might not want it as much. There are quality and security concerns with some Russian plants. They're not severe. They barely make the news, actually. And there has been a spotty record of project management and execution in Russia, specifically because they choose customers like Iran, Turkey, where political disagreements can spill out into other fields and threaten nuclear issues and other issues as well. The last two countries I wanted to talk about are the two superpowers, China and the US. China is really the last great hope of the nuclear enterprise, in my view. China currently has a small number of reactors, providing 3 to 4% of the country's electricity. It has a plan to increase that number dramatically. In fact, it's got 50 reactors under construction right now. It's also able to negotiate very advantageous terms because of its financial clout. We know that it has enormous financial resources, although these are not unlimited. And it's willing and able to support nuclear builds overseas, specifically in its allies like Pakistan. It also has a burgeoning supply chain and a human resource base that 10 years ago would have seemed weak, but now is very, very strong. The reason being a strong fission innovation program that is benefiting from knowledge transfer from other countries, including the US primarily. The challenges there are really what's left unsaid, which is the fear of an accident. We all go to bed thinking if there's an accident in China, we're all doomed. Now, we thought that about Fukushima as well, but it's important to know that of all the projects that the Chinese government approves, the first time a project has generated a political backlash and protests was a fuel plant project last year. So even in China, the public perception question is important. It's becoming the rather the crucial issue in that country. The U.S. gave birth to the nuclear enterprise. As most of you know, it has 100 reactors with a huge capacity, providing 20% of the country's electricity. It has an enormous market still and will continue to do so. It has a legacy of innovation, second to none. And it has a human resource base on which to build, although there are problems and gaps in that base as well. Also, it set the rule-based order for nuclear safety and security. And so Mr. Bastos talked about all the legal arrangements that countries have to accede to. Most of those arrangements came through American leadership through the UN and the attempt to create a multilateral world as opposed to a unipolar world. The challenges with the U.S. are really domestic, and that's the politics issue. Domestic political arrangements in the U.S. do not favor nuclear power. The power market is flawed. It does not appreciate clean power. It does not encourage long-term investments because it's completely deregulated with very few subsidies, except for certain technologies. And it does create a need for fudges, so you have to build markets that fix the problems facing the electricity sector in the U.S. And so you have existing reactors in the U.S., which were cash cows only 10 years ago, that are actually being shut down now. The U.S. lost 5 reactors in the last 4 or 5 years, and it might lose 13 in the next decade. So it's a serious challenge there. There are only 1 or 2 utilities in the U.S. with the balance sheet to build 1 nuclear reactor today. There are 2 nuclear builds right now in the U.S., each with 2 reactors. One was recently abandoned after spending $6 billion, and the other will probably cost taxpayers a staggering $12,500 per kilowatt, which is less expensive than renewables plus batteries, or less expensive than anything really, except fusion. And so couple this fact with the fact that the American Innovation Program is virtually dead in the water, and I'll talk more about that this afternoon, and prospects for nuclear in the U.S. are rather weak. There is one thing I want to mention, which is the strategic priorities of different countries. Those matter, and they matter for a customer nation like the Philippines as well. The U.S. does consider nuclear science.
Napahinggan natin ang mga lecture na IAEA Support on Infrastructure Development for a New Nuclear Power Program ni Dr. Jose Bastos ng International Atomic Energy Agency at Nuclear Policy and Technology Across the Globe ni Dr. Ahmed Abdullah ng University of California, San Diego at Carnegie Mellon University sa Nuclear Energy Forum, Considerations and Essential Information na inihandog sa atin ng UP National Engineering Center, Engineering Research and Development for Technology at UP Engineering Research and Development Foundation Incorporated. Maraming salamat mga kasali. Like our Facebook page at DZUP Specials. Abangan ang susunod na episode ng DZUP Special Features from Tuesday to Friday 9 to 10 a.m. On Thursdays, join us as we highlight iba't ibang tunog ng college radio sa Pilipinas on DZUP Special Features College Radio Edition. Got events you want to be covered by UP Diliman's official radio station? Send your proposals to dzup.marketing@gmail.com. Ako si Gian Librojo, magandang umaga.